What's up, nerds, ladies and gentlemen, and cool kids and cool cats and people who not cool, like I was never cool in high school. Hey guys, you know everything I've been telling you about for the last 2 months, 3 months about a new show and a new version of the show? Well, here it is. Technically, it's not, because this is the audio. And when you're listening to this, you're going to be like, hey, Razzle, you dumb fuck, this sounds just like a normal episode of Today We Learned. Well, guess what? You can watch this as well. That is the trick. So, my new show debuted last week on Prohibited Network. The Prohibited Network, you can go to prohibited.com. It's spelled weird because it's hip. It's called Prohibtd. Let me confirm that. Let me find their Instagram here. Yeah, it's a Prohibtd, prohibited.com, at prohibited, Facebook, prohibited, Prohibtd, all of that jazz. And you can watch it on iTunes, you can watch it on Amazon Fire Stick, Amazon Prime, you can watch it on Roku. It's a lot of places, guys. Why listen to it here? Well, probably because you're driving, but you can also watch it. So it debuted last week, and I'm going to be putting the audio files on here in case you guys can't watch them, but we would prefer if you watch them, because then that helps us sell ads and all that stuff. But regardless, thank you for listening. So we're going to do that. It debuted last week. This week debuts, I'm going to be putting out the audio files a week late, so that way you have time to watch them. And it came out last week, last Tuesday, which means tomorrow is Tuesday, because this is going up on a Monday. Tomorrow is Tuesday, and it's a new episode. And I have these two awesome Australian directors on who directed the movie Kin. The movie Kin comes out this weekend in theaters, K-I-N. I saw it already. We talk about it briefly in the episode that comes out tomorrow, and you should go see it. So the Baker brothers were awesome enough to do the show a couple weeks ago, and it airs tomorrow on Prohibited.com, and you guys should watch it. Watch it during lunch hour, or if you have unlimited data like I do, just pull it up on your phone and watch and listen while you're stuck in traffic or on the subway or wherever you are. I got listeners all over the world. I've been checking out the stats. I think there's two of you in Chile, one of you in Kazakhstan. If you're the one listening from Kazakhstan, tweet at me, at my name is Razzle, the number two. I want to meet you. I want to know who you are. Thank you so much. So this episode's great. This episode I got a really cool cat from the television show The Last OG with Tracy Morgan. Really fun dude, really interesting dude. He's got a lot of hands in the fire, much like I do. He's got his hands all over the place. So listen to this episode. Let me know what you think. Let us know what you think. Go to @prohibited and comment and all of that jazz. So once you listen to this, I said all that jazz twice or three times already in this intro. Without further ado, mildly interesting is the name of the show. Without further ado, if you like it or whatever, tweet at TWL Podcast, at Prohibited, at me. My name is Razzle2, which I might be changing soon after 5 years to just my name is Razzle to match my Instagram. But thank you so much for listening and downloading it, and I hope you enjoyed this new, somewhat very similar format of the show. And please watch it. Please watch it on Prohibited.com and all of the platforms that it's available. That would mean a lot to me, and thank you so much for sticking with me this long and waiting around and everything. Be awesome to each other, everybody. Be nice to people, and just be the best you can be, you know? Be the best you can be. Be cool. As Bill and Ted said, be awesome to each other. Another episode of Today We Learned. Here we go. And also, mildly interesting number one with Alan Maldonado. Welcome back to another episode of Mildly Interesting. My name is Razzle, and we have a great guest today. We've had almost like 19 podcasts just talking, waiting to start filming this.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to actually get some of this on tape, because he's a very talented, very funny dude.
You've seen him in Black-ish. Most recently, the reboot of Superfly.
Yeah.
He stars on The Last OG with Tracy Morgan and Tiffany Haddish. If you're not driving, please give a warm round of applause for Alan Maldonado.
Yeah, I mean, if you're driving, go ahead and do it. Yeah. Everybody
Teslas,
got insurance.
Right?
You know, Teslas. Use your knees. Use your knees.
How do you do your knees?
Do you know what I'm saying?
I usually do my left. Three and four?
No, I do one left. I do my left. Like, I can't do both. I can't do both. Yeah, I got to do left. I kind of got to get it real tight.
If you scoot your seat up enough, you can use both while you're still pressing on the gas.
See, that's different.
I'm not saying.
Now you're changing the game.
Condoning.
Now you're changing. Whoa. Take
dangerous.
It easy. Take it easy. It's only so much I can take in a day. You know what I'm saying?
Because then also, I mean, I'm not a huge text turn driver, but I tend to, all my, like, if I need to send a text or whatever, I use Siri. And my texts are always like, I talk into it. And they're always like 1,000 pages long because they always include, also I'm using Siri, so none of this may have made any sense.
Right. So you got an extra paragraph. That never worked for me. It just always messes up. Like, it'd misspell a word, or it'd be, you talk about a danger, and it'd put diaper. Like, yeah, you know what I'm saying? You're in diaper. And they'd be like, what?
I'm in a lot of diapers.
Yeah.
My friends with kids send me on all their errands.
They send you all your errands? Okay.
Alan, real quick up top, let's tell everybody where they can find you on the internet and social media and whatever you want to.
Everybody, look at that segue. Everybody listening, you can find me on Maldonado is everywhere on pretty much all your foreign social medias. MaldonadoIsEverywhere.com. Also, you know, everybody download Everybody Digital, as we talk about that. We'll talk about that a little later.
Absolutely.
But anything that you want to find out where, you know, Maldonado, myself, is going to be a part of, please follow social media. And Instagram is where I'm at most of the time.
Yeah, you at love Maldonado. Them photos.
Yeah.
Are you doing the stories or are you doing the photos?
I'm doing the stories, too. Like, me and my trainer, David, and my nephew, Rick, we call him Young and the Chestless.
Okay.
We've been training really hard. Yeah. Past 2 months for season two of The Last OG.
Yeah,
so,
how's your chest coming?
I got a nice chest. You know what I'm saying? I got about an A cup.
Okay.
Got about an A cup.
You're doing push-ups. So what are you doing for your chest?
We're doing everything. Like, I'm benching 335 right now.
Get
then
out.
Declining
that
365.
Up.
Yeah, we leg pressing 1,200 right now. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous how we're training right now. I most of the time I don't even believe what the hell I'm
It sounds like you're just reciting what The Rock mentions on his Instagram.
Exactly. it's less cool though. Like, The Rock makes it so cool to lift weights. Somehow his face is still handsome while he's lifting. Like, we got the ugly face on.
He just posted an Instagram the other day and he was like covered in sweat promoting like his new headphones or whatever. And Josh Brolin commented. He's like, admit it, you dumped water on yourself before this video.
Right. Like, he just makes it look effortless. Like, he just makes it look so good while we're in there training. It looks terrible.
His
it's not
form,
cool at all.
Not cool at all. It's like Pilates. Like, Pilates, I feel like, are people using machine improperly.
Yes.
Because it's weird machine.
And you're like, what is this? This looks like a surgery table. Like, I don't know what you're doing this for.
You were in the new Superfly.
Yeah.
And you have this app. Let's talk about this, Everybody Digital.
Let's talk about it.
Before we started taping, you were talking about how you were in Palm Springs for a festival for this app, right?
Yes.
So let's talk about this, because this is really cool.
Definitely shout out to the Palm Springs Short Fest for, you know, supporting and incorporating Everybody Digital into their festival. Everybody Digital, we're basically the short film version of Netflix.
Okay.
We've been curating films for the past year and a half. We have a huge catalog of licensed short films from around the world, award-winning, and we're also producing original content. We're slated to do pretty much a short film a month.
Okay.
And a digi-series every other month. We've been working with some major, major stars from everybody. Basically, Deion Cole from Black-ish.
Oh, I love
Miles Brown from Black-ish. Basically,
Deion's so funny at stand-up,
too. Black-ish I've talked into doing the short.
Yeah.
Along with teaming up with Jesse T. Utcher from Survivor's Remorse and the upcoming Shaft. Ron Rico to Sheena Arnold from, you know, Martin and Survivor's Remorse. And we just recently did a short with Tracy Morgan. With the app, I'm looking to really elevate the genre and take the genre to another place, as it's been overlooked for so many years. It's sort of seen as a stepping stone rather than the actual industry, where music videos, we're talking like commercials, even Instagram, you know, videos have elevated, and there's an industry for it with short films. It's basically you take a wad of money and throw it in a fireplace.
Now, remind me what, because I always... I always hear and read about it when it's award season.
Yeah.
What are the stipulations for a short film? Because isn't it like it has to be longer than 7 minutes, but shorter than 20 or something like that?
Well, everybody's requirements are different. I think for the Academy, I think it's under 34 minutes is considered a short film. For us, everything on our app is 20 minutes or less.
Oh, okay, perfect.
Whether it's our Digi series, whether it's our short films, as we, when we categorize our system, our layout, it's by time.
Okay.
Meaning that we know everybody's attention spans is getting shorter and shorter and shorter. Everybody's on the go and on the move. So in between whatever you're doing, we got categories, 1 minute, 5 minute, 10 minute, 15 minutes, and 20 minute. So you can pretty much fit everybody digital into your already busy life.
Yeah.
And that's something that we've been incorporating. It's built for your phone. It's built for when you're on the move and on the go. And if you want to watch short form content, which is blowing up, but highly produced, strong narratives with great acting, with big name acting.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing. I want to elevate short films to add more exposure to the lifeline, being that most films only can go through the film festival circuit, which is only 12 to 15 months.
Yeah.
And then after that.
And that's tough to get in.
Yes, already. And it's expensive.
Very expensive.
And it kind of falls off the
cliff. Especially since you have to pay for all your traveling. All your travel. All the promotion.
Just the submissions alone.
Just
submissions
to submit.
Like $50 a pop.
And that's just to hopefully get distribution.
Exactly. Exactly. Where with everybody digital, everybody out there, all of our short filmmakers, go to everybodydigital.com and you can upload your film straight on the site for free.
Oh, wow.
We do curate as we want to, you know, the creme de la creme of short films, because we're introducing short films to the average consumer. As it's a niche market, being everybody that goes to these film festivals are a part of production, friends and family are in the industry already.
Yeah.
But the people that go to AMC, that watch TV shows every day, don't even know these films or festivals even exist. So that's where Everybody Digital is going to bridge the gap between short film festivals and the average consumer.
That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
That's really cool.
Thank you.
You were born in Bellflower, California.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Born what was in that Bellflower. Like? How was that like? Because that's considered Los Angeles.
Yeah, it's definitely Los Angeles. It's Bellflower is right. I was born in Bellflower, lived in Compton till I was about seven, then moved to Rialto, where that's my hometown, where I grew up. Everybody in IE, anybody listening to IE, Rialto, stand up. I grew up there, went to middle school and high school, played basketball there. Was like in the Final Four in Southern California playing. It's different. It's different in LA. I talk about it all the time, being that it's kind of a way, it's an hour away, it's kind of a small, it has a small town type feel to it, even though it's not. It is a bigger city, so to speak, but it's still country at the same time.
Is it near Watts?
No, that's way.
Where is that?
Compton is near Watts.
Okay.
Yes, Compton is
near
Watts.
Because they got those weird towers.
The tower things,
that's all
yes.
I know.
Yes,
it's from Instagram, as people post.
Rialto is an hour away. It's near San Bernardino, if you know where that's at, Riverside area.
Yeah.
Yes, that's where I grew up at. And that's kind of molded and shaped me as an individual, where I'm homely in that sense.
Yeah.
Where I don't have to be out and about all the time, just because I'm used to this kind of simple
small
life.
Small city.
Yeah, yeah.
Did you, when you lived out there, did you get back, did you like travel to LA a lot?
Oh man, I used to, when I first began acting at like 17, I would travel, take two trains, ride the bus and a bike just to get to my acting classes.
Oh wow.
Like, you know, and I had to borrow like my homegirl's bike, which was pink, which was always great.
Yeah.
Just rolling.
Tassels
Into the I rode that thing until the wheels fall off. Literally, I was riding up Venice Boulevard and the pedal fell off and I ended up tumbling like almost a half a block. Just from riding this bike so much, going back and forth. So.
Did it have the plastic pedals or the metal pedals?
Yeah, I remember the metal pedal. And if it hit your shin, death.
Done.
Peter Griffin.
You know what I'm
saying?
Those metal pedals, and they like they had the teeth for your shoes?
Yes. Death. So it, luckily it wasn't that, but it was a nasty spill. I used to travel, you know, religiously 3 to 4 times a week on the train and the bus just to get to LA.
And so you you were right, you know, Rialto.
Yeah.
You have any siblings?
Yeah, I have 2 older sisters. My mother, I have 5 nieces, 1 nephew, and 2 nephews, and 1 great niece.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
a great niece.
Yeah, I have a 25-year-old niece.
Are you? So you're the youngest?
Yes, I'm the baby.
And how old is your oldest sister?
We're all 7 years apart.
Oh, wow.
So 42 and 49 are my sisters.
7 years apart.
Yeah, we're all 7 years apart. So my mom's lucky 21.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A great niece. I have some nieces and nephews, and they're so fun.
I'm going back to see them next week, and I can't wait. I love my nieces and my nephews. I'm big on family. I'm huge on family. I've been, the father figure to most of these, well, all of them, their entire lives.
Yeah.
So they hold a very special place in my heart. And it's definitely been one of the reasons I've been able to stay out of trouble at an early age because I felt responsible for them. So a lot of things that I thought that I would have been done selfishly, I didn't do because I knew I had a bigger responsibility over my entire family.
You grow up fast, that's for sure.
Very fast.
It really makes you grow up fast.
Very, very, very fast when you have to be the man of the family at the age of 9. So,
oh, wow.
It was funny. My mom was sharing a story the other day about being in Vegas when I was like 10 years old and I wanted Tony Romans. I went by myself at 10. And they didn't want to serve me because I was a kid.
Yeah.
So I requested to see the manager and all of these things. You're at 10. And you damn right, I got to eat.
And you got to eat.
So I've always kind of been like that and been, a person of focus and determination at an early age.
What's your go-to at Tony Roma's?
Man, the baby back ribs.
Yeah?
The baby back ribs, man. That was the jam, man. Like, that was like the fanciest restaurant we would go to as a kid.
Yeah. Would you go to Vegas a lot?
Oh, my mom was in Vegas almost every month. She loved gambling. She still does now. You know, that's where all my money goes now.
Are you a gambler? Do you gamble?
No, I'm not a gambler. Like, I literally would go to Vegas, and I'm the worst because I'm like, I'm spending money to gamble. I'm literally there to spend that money.
To spend that money.
I'm not trying to win it back. Or I'm like literally there to have fun with this money, playing whatever games. Like, arcades. Like, Circus is my jam in Vegas. Like, Midway, all of that, that's me.
I remember going to Circus when I was, like, 6 years old.
Yeah.
And they had it seemed like this most extravagant place.
Yes. I know where you're going.
As a child.
I know where you're going.
I'm like, it's a giant castle.
Yes.
Themed like a circus.
Yes.
Two things I love, castles and circuses.
Yes.
And they had, I remember my uncle, because they lived in Vegas at the time, and we won all these unnecessary stuffed animals that we couldn't fit in our luggages.
Yep.
Then when I finally moved out here, and we would go frequently, we went one time, and it was just like this most rundown.
Yes.
Like,
yes. When you become a dope, all the allure
the magic
just
is all
fades.
Gone. Like, even Excalibur is so like...
And it's the same. Like, it hasn't changed nothing inside of the Midway. It's totally the same. Like, I used to be there so much that... I used to almost had like a system because you used to get these booklets. All the people that attended got a booklet and you get like one, buy one, get one free on the arcades. I literally would stand on the monorail and be on the monorail for like an hour collecting these books
the
from
booklets.
Different people.
Are you sure you got those buy one, get one free booklets or the other booklets that the people are passing out?
No. I got them. I literally would have them tear it out of that book. Like, give me, let me get it. And I would end up with like 50 of them and then go. So my mom would give me whatever, $10, $20. I would go in and run that. And I became such a master at all the games over there. Like, I remember couples and adults would pay me to win prizes.
To win the prizes.
Yeah. I had a whole little ring going. I had a ring going when I was in Vegas.
Ring.
Yeah.
What do you remember being the best game you were good at?
When you throw the ball in the, like, it's like
ski
a
ball?
Race. The ski ball, but it's not ski ball.
Oh, they got the races?
The little races thing.
Oh,
like,
man.
I used to, kill.
Those I could never do those because the ball would always bounce back, or even same with the gun. The same
the
mechanism
where
you shoot
thing.
The water, and I'm like, this is rigged.
I used to wait till the whole thing would fill up and get the biggest prize because I used to kill everybody. So that's when people started paying me to get the big prizes. One of my favorite people that I look up to in life is the individual. And I end up meeting someone who was related to the guy, the person that marketed the Pet Rock.
Love it.
The Pet Rock. Like, there was a Pet Rock. It was the number one toy for Christmas was a Pet Rock. I marvel at the end of it. It's the same person that was behind that was behind the Sea Monkeys.
Shut up.
Remember Sea Monkeys?
Yeah, Brian Shrimp.
Those are just like little parasites.
Yeah, that's what they are.
And you shine light on it and they twirl.
But the art.
He marketed like it was
the
Sea
art
Monkey. Like, it was, you thought that's what you was getting. Everybody got it. Like, he did that. He did the Chia Pet. Chia Pet, he did that one as well.
That's
like,
the money you need.
That is one of my goals in life, is to be able to invent something like that.
Well, I remember, do you remember Pogs?
Yes, I remember Pogs.
Pogs were a thing. Like, when I was in seventh grade, Pogs were
everything.
All the rage. Everybody
had
a Pog.
Did a Pog tournament? Did you do a Pog tournament?
My 13th birthday party, there's video of it somewhere.
Did he have a Pog tournament?
We had a Pog party, and if you walked down the stairs of my mom's house, you would think it was like an 80s movie about in a Coke den.
Because there were
you know, 12 and 13 year olds huddled, crouched on stairs playing games of Pog. There were people in doorways playing Pogs.
Yes.
It was hysteria of metal, just kids playing Pogs.
Metal or plastic slammer?
Depends. I had that thick slammer.
Yes.
And then I had some metal ones.
Yes.
And then everybody had that gold OJ slammer. Do you remember that one?
Yep. Oh my God. Like, Pogs was
Pogs were huge. That's
kids don't even
that
do
flash
stuff
in the
like
pan.
That more, man. Like, there's no like active stuff that these kids are
doing. I guess Pokemon Go could be considered that. At least they're going outside.
I guess. Well, I'm talking about just as far as like, fidget spinners.
But fidget spinners is like
competition against each other.
But it wasn't like Pogs got like people that taught people how to gamble.
Trading cards, like all of that stuff. Like, none of the kids
do. Were you into trading cards growing up?
I was into, because I had basketball cards.
Yeah.
I had a bunch of, you know, I was a big, huge Laker fan. So I had all of them, you know, Magic and all. I collected all of those things, man. I had a couple baseball, but basketball was my thing. I still have them.
Yeah?
I still got like some Shaq rookie cards and all type of stuff. Like
I used to have some. Do you remember Desert Storm?
Desert Storm.
Desert Storm. It was that they changed the name like 19 times. It was when they were when Bush 1 was doing something in Saudi Arabia or whatever.
Yeah, I remember that.
It was the Gulf War or whatever.
Yeah.
They had Desert Storm playing cards.
Are you serious?
For real.
For real. So they got this full on you know, Joe Schmo from Minnesota. He got an action card. Are you serious?
Johnny Nesbitt driving a tank from Okinawa, Florida, or
like,
whatever.
Who does that? How are you exploiting the army that way?
Yeah, Desert Storm trading cards here.
I feel like they should be doing something more important.
Yeah, like Desert Storm trading cards. We'll pull up a link here and we'll post a photo on the video or whatever. Desert Storm trading cards. They were made by Topps.
Of course they're made by Topps.
Which is one of the only two companies that, you know...
That is ridiculous. But I'm pretty sure pretty cool.
They display
the
people...
that went to war.
They display people like Norman Schwarzkopf Jr. and Dick Cheney.
Oh, my God.
Or military weapons or vehicles.
Okay.
Hey, do you like a Jeep? Here's a Jeep.
Here's a card of a Jeep.
I'll trade you two Jeeps.
No wonder. No wonder trading cards are no more. Like, they're doing stuff like that. Take it easy.
It says here on my notes that you're Puerto Rican and a black descent.
How does that?
Which?
My mother's black. She's from Alabama.
What part in Alabama?
Rayma, Alabama.
Rayma.
South of Montgomery.
Okay, because
sticks.
How do you spell that?
R-A-M-E-R, I believe.
Raymer, Alabama.
Alabama.
My grandmother is from Coffee Springs, Alabama.
I have no idea what that's.
Do you know where Dothan is?
No.
Enterprise.
I only know Montgomery and Birmingham.
Okay.
That's it.
Yep, it's south of Montgomery here, Raymer, Alabama.
Alabama. The sticks, man. Like, literally a house every mile.
Yeah, okay, so it's about... It looks like it's about maybe 30 minutes north of Enterprise, which is close to where my grandmother was from, Coffee Springs, which was literally a population of six.
Terrible. Six people?
It was a very small, very small town.
So everybody's the doctor, the police.
Pretty much.
Everybody takes turns.
Some of the best barbecue I've ever had.
I'm pretty sure.
Was in somebody's garage.
Really?
With like those white folding
tables.
And
he was probably the judge. He was probably the sheriff and, you know, the veterinarian.
Yeah, he did them all.
He was all those things.
Raymer, Alabama.
Six people.
Also known as Athens,
is an
unincorporated community located in Montgomery County. Originally known as Athens. Let's see what the population
unincorporated.
Is.
Unincorporated. They have to say that? Jesus. Like, this just lets you know how nothing has changed.
It doesn't say the population here.
Yeah, it's probably about 2,800.
Yeah.
Something like that. Like,
have you ever gone to visit? Do you go back there a lot?
Yeah, we used to go almost every summer as a kid for our family reunion. Shout out to my Uncle Sonny, man, who always held it down. And
I know your Uncle Sonny. We got him right here. Come on out, Uncle Sonny.
Yeah, Uncle Sonny looked like Steve Harvey. He
really?
Had Steve Harvey suits. Like, I've never seen him outside a suit. Like, if I probably saw him in some shorts and a t-shirt, I probably wouldn't recognize him. And I'm like, I don't know who this man is.
Even in the heat in Alabama.
Even in the heat, he was in a suit.
That's like, classy right there.
It, with a hat, the whole nine, man. But like my like I said, my mom's town is so small. Like everything that I did as a kid, like even you know, was in the newspaper. Like that's what it was. Like, yeah. You know. Like my grandfather was, you know, big around the city as well. So, and I look exactly like him. So it would be weird going there as a kid because people would like, they would literally think that they saw ghosts.
You're his Looper.
When I walked in it, he looked like, and I didn't even know, I never met my grandfather. Yeah. And he looked like Jimmy Lee. That was my grandfather's name. Jimmy Lee. Yeah, he looked just like Jimmy Lee. And I'd be like, I was oblivious until like later on in life, my mom, maybe 5-6 years ago, they found a picture of my grandfather. And I came in the house and literally did a double take because I'm like, when did I take that picture? Because we look exactly
that much alike.
It's scary to me.
In that wild house, like you can have siblings.
Yeah.
And like I look very similar to my dad. But my other siblings don't look anything alike anybody. And even you know, to be generation removed.
Yeah.
With half a DNA from somebody else.
Yeah, and still.
And look, still look like just like your mom's dad.
Yeah, just spitting image. It's crazy. It's
and
crazy.
Your dad was Puerto Rican?
Yeah, my dad's Puerto Rican, born in San Juan. And then all of my family on my Puerto Rican side of family now live in New York, Harlem and Bronx, and some in Jersey. That was always good and interesting, being that I would go there after my father passed. My father passed when I was 7.
Oh, okay.
And I would go to New
Sorry
York
to hear
every
that.
Summer. No worries. I had to go out. Pretty much I was there every summer with my Puerto Rican side of the family.
Yeah.
In New York. So yeah. I would go from L.A. to New York and then Alabama. Imagine the first time doing that, the culture shock that I had being going from LA to New York, which is all fast paced and hustle and bustle. And then Alabama.
And this is when you're 7 too.
Yeah, this is I was young.
This is back before New York really got
Yeah, no, it wasn't gentrified.
Kid friendly.
Yeah, it wasn't gentrified. Yeah. No. Harlem was tough. Yeah. Harlem was Harlem, man. And I attest a lot of who I am to growing up in these particular areas, especially Harlem, and being around that New York environment. I felt like it really injected the hustle mentality. Like I seen people selling stuff out of a hole in the wall, literally. Some guys selling tank tops and socks, you know, out of a hole that's in the wall.
Yeah.
So it really gave me an extra boost coming back to California with that same type of mentality, where it's just a faster pace and just the pressure to survive seems a little more thicker out there.
It really is I'm seeing it a lot in recent times, of the idea of, you know, hustling or always, you know, always be closing mindset, where it's like you have your hands in as many things as you can.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like you with your apps and, mm-hmm. and things like that, and acting and clothing. Did I see you have a clothing line too?
Yeah,
is that a thing?
I have a t-shirt.
So it's like different things like that, you know, where like finest. I'll do comedy. I got this thing. You know, host podcast. I'm developing a game, and it's a board game, and it's all about, you know, it's of that old school mentality of, always have something going.
I mean,
multiple
streams of income is what I profess to everyone in every walk of life. Like multiple streams of income, because everything does happen in seasons. Where there's a time when acting is really rocking for me, and there's a time when writing is really rocking for me. There's a time when my music company, Get It Done Records, is going, or with the T-shirt, with even with the Kids Foundation. Yeah. All these things are needed and utilized during particular seasons, just because, you know, everything does have those type of ins and outs, where it's like you're not doing one thing consistent every day just because, you know, the climate may change.
Yeah, you know, you just always have to have something going.
Yeah, you gotta definitely always have something going. I mean, in this particular industry, if you're not involved in your own career thoroughly, or, you know, like we were joking earlier, like if you allow somebody to outlove you loving yourself, outwork you working for yourself, then you're not, you know, you're not doing the best that you can. You know, a lot of times people put too much onus on their agents, their managers, to create these things, or, you know, create a career for you, where you should be creating your career,
creating,
and they're supposed to be helping you facilitate these ideas. So that's something that I live by strongly.
Always, you know, always create, if you, you know, if you can't do it yourself, nobody's going to do it for you.
Exactly.
You
know? It's almost insane to think that somebody that's never known you, never, that doesn't know what you like or how you feel to write or create the perfect project for you.
Like that's insane. Just expect them.
That's to say, that's winning the lottery. Some people win the lottery. But to think that someone is organically, magically creating this perfect role for you is ludicrous.
Ludicrous. You were recently in the reboot of Superfly.
Yeah.
How fun was that? Because Superfly, it originally came out in 1972, mm-hmm. and it was on the forefront of the, you know, the blaxploitation dramas, crime dramas, badassery.
Yeah.
And we rebooted that here. What was that like? How was that?
It was cool. Like, I mean, we
did you grow up with movies like that? Like, how did you, like, living in Rialto, you know, traveling to small town Alabama, how did you get into, you know, a few questions, I guess, to go from something like that? Because you were also in Die Hard 4, which is like, which I want to hear about, because Die Hard, I love Die Hard. But to go from, like, to realize you like acting and you're the, you know, let's walk through that.
Yeah, well, basically, I got into acting. It was in high school. Like, I kind of played around with it, like, my 10th grade year, but it wasn't until my senior year that it really hit me. I played basketball, and I wasn't, you know, naturally gifted at that. And I was a kind of a late bloomer, and I had to work extremely hard just to get good in a short amount of time. And I built a lot of my work ethic, the ethic that I still implement on everything I do today from basketball. But I quickly learned that you can't teach height. So that made my dreams of the NBA, you know,
you're pretty tall, though. How tall are you?
I'm not ball player size.
Fair enough.
I'm not ball player size.
I know that from the ruler.
I have a strong presence, you know. but just to think that when I got into acting class, in my acting, Miss Barlett, shout out to Miss Barlett, I felt like this was what I was born to do. It was like a fish to water. I went in there, I ended up writing plays, just taking over the theater department in this one semester, and it seemed perfect. So what I did was take all the energy that I put into basketball and implement it into acting, and that's what drove my career and ultimately landing, you know, me on Young and the Restless at the age of 21 and kind of just starting my career and going from
there. What did you do on that show? Because I've had friends who've done things like that. And my buddy was just telling me last night, he's like, he may have been Young and the Restless and another one. He's like, I was the guy in the background, like the painter or whatever.
Oh, no.
Because they did a lot of that.
I had a reoccurring role on there. What's great about Young and the Restless is what's very special is that I auditioned for like a series regular. And when I did the screen test, a guy came out, and it was like everybody, like it was like God walked out. It was ridiculous. And I'm a kid from the projects. I don't know. I don't know the procedures. I'm like, hey, what's up, man? You know? He's like, yo, I have to come out and tell you, you did an incredible job. I think you're a fantastic actor. I'm like, wow, this is incredible. Thank you. And I'm kind of just accepting a compliment. Yeah. And I walk off, and then I find out like that was like the owner or the person that runs the whole executive producer. He never comes out the booth, is basically what I heard. And ultimately, my manager called me and said I didn't get the part, but they created a role for me.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, they created a role for me. He was like, I only can guarantee you 3 episodes and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And I ended up, you know, doing 17 episodes on the show. And that was cut short because I got hit by a drunk driver.
Oh, no.
Yeah, 21. 6 months after.
In a car or like?
I was walking.
You were walking.
I was walking. It was going 65 miles an hour in a BMW Roadster. It hit me. I flew in the air, landed on my face. I broke my, almost lost my bottom lip, broke my right leg. My spine was curved. And
do you have like pins or anything in your?
I healed
completely.
The blessing of it all, like, you know, my testimony to it is that like everything, it really shaped my POV, meaning that nothing is nor positive nor negative, it just is.
Okay.
So you have the choice to see things as a positive or see it as a negative. Like so many people could see me being hit by a drunk driver as a negative, or you can see it as a positive because my faith in God, my understanding of life, my appreciation of life and knowing that you're not promised tomorrow and everything that was amped up because of it, my work ethic, my spirituality, and then also my testimony to God is that the week that I was cleared to audition, I booked three TV shows in 1 week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And that was confirmation that I was going in the right direction. But that was a very interesting time for me, coming out of getting, you know, Young and the Restless, my life had changed. Like, I went from the pride, I was making real money, to having to kind of start all over again.
Yeah.
Because my role.
How long of a recovery time was that?
6 months. 6 months.
Physical therapy and everything.
Therapy and, you know, just my face had to heal.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't do any plastic surgery or anything. I still have my scars here and here and here. So it was just, I had to wear a mask. Like, I couldn't let the sun hit it and anything like that. So I was, it was about 6 months before I could get back in action.
And you just, I mean, you took to water once you got back.
Yeah, once
auditions.
I got back, I was, you know,
booking
I'm a maniac.
Three in a week.
I'm a maniac when it comes to, like, you know, continuing to pursue my dream and pursue what my goals. Like, it was a whole bunch of stuff that happened in between then, but it's various stuff that is, like, I had a back surgery maybe like 5 years ago, and I had a tumor in my back.
Oh, no way.
It was benign.
Okay.
But it was a wrapping tumor. It was wrapping against my lung. It was a bleeding tumor wrapping around my lungs and pressing against my spine. And I thought I just had back problems because, like, I got hit by a damn car.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just like, oh, that's to be expected. But we discovered that it was a tumor. So in removing that, immediately after my surgery, I demand to walk. They're like, you're crazy. I said, no, I had to walk. I walked the hallway and back until I passed out.
Yeah.
Waking up the next day, I get an email and I got an audition, right? So I'm like, I auditioned, like, I think the next day. And the whole time, I'm like, yo, talking to Doc, hey, I got to run this audition real quick. I'm going back. He's like, yeah, you're crazy. What are you talking about, Alan? I'm like, no. No, I said, I'm going to be back. I'll be right back. I got to run this audition real quick. He's like, you just got out of back surgery, you know, hours ago.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? I said, yo, tomorrow I got an audition, man. I said, so I got to go. So whether you like, so we argued for, you know, from time for a whole day, basically.
Give me meds or make it fixed or something.
So the next morning he's like, all right, you gave me an ultimatum. He's like, if you leave, you can't come back. I was like, well, sure, I don't care. I was like, I told him, go to the other day. He thought I was a maniac, and I probably was.
I mean, yeah.
So he released me.
I'm not a doctor, but it sounds like removing
it's
a tumor
the thing to
is
do.
Not a thing to leave, right?
He releases me. I go to the audition. I have a friend of mine. I said, all you got to do is stand me up. Just stand me up, and I'll be fine. I literally have the hospital wristband still on. I go in there to the audition, and just a testimony of how much I love and really, you know, love acting. When I got in there, I didn't feel anything. When I got in there, I didn't feel anything, and I just performed. Did not get the job, but
do you remember what the role was?
I have no idea. I have no idea. I was high off of medicine. I'm pretty sure in my mind I killed
you. You killed it.
And they probably watched a drunken man.
You weren't even at the right audition.
Yeah,
they were just like,
let's
humor this
guy.
It was
a Petco commercial. I don't even know. Like, I did it though. And that was my whole point. It's like, I had to do it. Like, I had to continue to pursue my
You're giving
dream
a monologue
no
inside
what.
A cafeteria and people
right.
are just rolling
it probably was at the gas station. Who knows where I was at. But it was crazy. But for me, that's the type of mental toughness that I always challenge myself with. Throughout my acting career, and I think that is the lifeblood to the success that I'm achieving now.
Where in your career was this? Because now you're killing.
Yeah,
this is
I kind of jumped ahead. That was about 10 years after the back accident. So Young and the Restless is what kind of started everything off, and I kind of went from there doing these other TV shows that I mentioned. I booked three TV shows from there, from Judge and Amy to The Shield, Las Vegas. Those are all those three shows, and then kind of built in between those years, I literally felt like I was running in place. Even though I grew, like I would went from co-stars to guest stars and recurring. And stuff. Yeah. I just felt like it was stagnant. I wasn't growing. It wasn't until 5 years ago that I really started to implement the business side of things. I went to college for business, and I never really incorporated with my artistry. And it wasn't until then that I saw real results in my career, where I really began to think of myself as a small business rather than just a career or an actor. And implementing what type of brand that I want, implementing marketing plans, implementing all of these things that a small business does, a business plan, creating that. That's when I saw my career go to another level. Also, when I cut my hair.
Yeah,
I used to have really long hair down
you
my waist.
You pulled the Metallica and you cut your hair.
I really had long hair down my waist, and I had a real intimidating look.
When you were acting, you had long hair?
Yeah. I was on Young and the Restless with cornrows.
With long hair.
Yeah, I was on Young and the Restless with cornrows, baby. I was doing it for the culture.
Yeah.
But I cut that, and then all of a sudden people saw me. I could be funny.
Yeah.
I was allowed to be funny, I guess. When I had hair, nobody even thought I was funny. It was weird.
Yeah.
But
hair is a humor killer.
Bananas. Everybody out there, if it's not a beard, don't do it if you want to be funny. It was after I did that, that's when my career kind of took off and really taking the business side. I booked a show called The Startup, was a series regular for a show.
My friend Ashley was on that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Ashley Grace.
Yeah, we did that. It turned into a TV movie, didn't go to series. But from there, I've been working ever since. And finally landing, you know, The Last OG along with Survivor's Remorse, where I became a writer for the show as well, and now I'm a writer for The Last OG. So
that's awesome.
It's been definitely an uphill battle and a grind, but something that I cherish.
Did you grow up watching like Saturday Night Live?
No.
So booking The Last OG was just like there. I mean, obviously Tracy Morgan's, icon.
I've been a fan of Tracy Morgan. I was never, you know, heavy in like SNL though, but I was a fan of Tracy, an incredible fan of Jordan Peele. I did watch Key and Peele, so I thought that was hilarious. It was more the script, the idea of the show that was like, I gotta have this project. Yeah. That was the major thing, you know. And Jordan and Tracy was kind of like the icing on the cake, but the project itself, I thought the premise and the idea and the pilot script was hilarious, and I wanted to do everything possible to be a part of the show.
I mean, it's getting like regarded as a very funny show, right?
Yeah,
like,
man, people love it.
Nominated or whatever, and it got
we're in consideration right now. We already got greenlit for season two. We were the number one cable comedy this year, so we broke records on our launch. Like, we begin an incredible response from people in regards to show, and to think that I believe season two will, you know, leapfrog season one, being that now that we have everybody's voices, we were able to write to everybody's shit and write to the characters that have already established.
It's definitely, I feel like the second season and on is where they really like, even like with Friends and Seinfeld, you the first seasons, you know, it's great, but then you really get in the rhythm of knowing the characters.
Yes.
And even for like the actors on these, the more seasons you do, you just go on and turn it on and you're there.
You just get comfortable with everybody. The chemistry grows, which is another story I like to share, that like me and Tracy's chemistry, you would think that we've been, you know, knowing each other all our lives.
Well, also I wanted, because he was in a major accident as well.
Yeah.
So I got to imagine you guys have a bonding over the idea.
Yeah, we definitely
had
a bonding. Like we didn't know. Well, I didn't share that with him until, you know, probably like the first couple of weeks of shooting.
Yeah.
But when we did the screen test for the show, I walked through the door. And Tracy's in there, and it's the first time I've ever seen her. He met me. He screams out, "Cousin Bobby!"
Yeah.
And we begin to improv. And we improv basically for 10 minutes straight. And Jordan Peele's throwing in ideas. And we didn't touch one word in the audition. And that's how I booked the show.
That's awesome.
That's how I booked the show, because our chemistry was that spot, like instantaneous. Like we often talk about it. We're like, we felt like we were, you know, brothers in another life. That's how close. And the chemistry between us really is. So being able to, you know, showcase that on screen, I think that's what people really see. Tracy's a phenomenal talent, and to share the bond of us having this accident only amplified our connection.
Yeah, it's amazing how you'll go through life and you'll meet all these cool, interesting people or whatever, people come and go. Then you'll get these people, you know, that you just have a chemistry, that it's like you've known each other and you can play off each other.
Yes.
There's just a bond that seems to be forever, you know?
Yes, man. Like, and that's what it is. Like, he's going to be, you know, he's my big brother, my big homie for life, man. And he's already in a short amount of time and known of, it's amplified everything that I've been doing and trying to do with his help, man. It's definitely a godsend.
Yeah. You were in Die Hard 4.
Let's talk about it.
Tell me a little bit about Die Hard 4.
I love Bruce Willis.
I love Die Hard. And
too.
I saw that on your thing. And I'm also, you were in The Equalizer, which Denzel was great. That was a great movie, too.
Another one.
Holy cow.
I modeled my career after Bruce Willis, man.
Yeah?
He's a funny, tough guy.
Isn't he?
He's a funny, tough guy. He's able to do that. Die Hard was the perfect film for him.
Perfect.
You know, people forget that he did Moonlighting.
Yeah.
Moonlight. Like, he did funny, comedic. First Date is one of my favorite movies of all time. He's hilarious, but also can do these dramatic roles and be Oscar nominated. Did he win for Sixth Sense? I don't know if he won. But he was Oscar nominated for it. So, like, he can do, you know, he can cover the entire spectrum. I modeled my career after Bruce Willis. So, Die Hard was hilarious in this way, being that when I booked it, we had this huge, we did the opening sequence. I've kind of got this thing where I open films. That was like the third big major film that I've opened for. One being a Die Hard, the second being Straight Outta Compton, and now most recently Superfly.
Yeah,
it's kind of been my thing. I'm getting my Samuel Jackson on.
I love it.
Sam Jackson on. So we get this whole scene. It's like three pages of me in my roommate, you know, kind of discussing us being hackers and all those other things. And eventually they blow up the house. So we get to the premiere. It's at the Radio Music City Hall. It's the biggest thing I've ever been a part of in my entire life. The red carpet is two and a half blocks around the thing. I must have been on the red carpet almost 45 minutes. That's how long of a red carpet was. So we get inside, the premiere is happening, everything is going, and literally the credits is rolling, the opening credits is rolling, and my face pops up. The guy comes in, "Hey, you touched my computer." I say, "No, I didn't touch the computer." Boom, they blow up the entire house. I'm on screen all of 5 seconds.
Amazing.
5 seconds. It was a three-page scene. And I died before the opening credits even. You could have bought me for a dollar. I thought I had a full like scene about to happen. I literally died hard. I died hard and fast. It was the most funny and awkward situation.
That's amazing.
I was sitting there like, yo, I literally spent an hour on a red carpet.
Isn't that funny?
2 seconds in the movie.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So good.
But you're in Die Hard.
I'm in Die Hard.
You're a part of the Die Hard.
You're damn right.
That's one of the most iconic franchises.
Yes.
They keep trying to figure out how to make sequels or reboot or whatever.
And I would love to see another one. I would love to see Bruce Willis in another one. I don't care if he's in a wheelchair.
Yeah.
You give me Die Hard 17. I don't care.
I'll take 17 Die Hards.
Yeah, I'll take 17. Easy. Same with like Equalizer. Denzel was incredible.
Yeah, they got a new one coming out.
Yeah, you got E2.
I didn't know this. Here's the thing. While I was looking up stuff about you and things like that, The Equalizer was actually a TV show.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that because...
In the, like the 80s.
In
I think
the 80s.
Like, yeah.
They're making everything. They're rebooting everything. For a while, they were making like TVs out of movies, the movies out of TV. And now it's like so confusing.
They just
with Lethal Weapon and all these.
Yep.
But yeah, The Equalizer aired on CBS from 1985 until late spring of 1989. I didn't know that. It had the weird logo too. Like, look at that logo.
Yeah, he was British.
Yeah.
He was British. So
that was a good movie.
Yeah, no, Equalizer was great, man. And I always like to share the story with Denzel because like I remember walking around, like going from different sets of locations. He probably thought I was a weirdo or some shit.
Yeah.
He probably never caught it. Like I literally
did he do his lip thing? Like
yeah, of course.
That's the only thing I can do.
Denzel is Denzel.
I love it.
When we would walk the set, I literally would like walk in his footsteps. I would walk in his footsteps, like literally kind of trying to live out my whole dream or like the idea of my career to walk in his footsteps. And like we played catch on set, man.
Yeah.
Like we had a real father-son moment. Like it was big to me.
Yeah.
But it was a baseball scene. We got to play catch. I got to play catch with Denzel,
You
know what I'm saying? That's just a dream.
That's a dream.
But it was incredible work with him and just kind of watching him and just learning and just like... This is one of those things like you get to work with Denzel. That's a lifetime dream that some people never have the opportunity to do.
He's one of those actors where even if he's not doing anything, he's doing so much.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yes. You can watch him, like, you can, I mean, you could watch him eat a hamburger.
And it's interesting.
And it's an interesting,
he makes,
like,
it interesting. Yes, he's that.
You
he's
feel
that
whatever character he's doing, that eating
talented.
That hamburger.
He's that detailed. I
and
remember
he's that.
When I was, I got there, because I've auditioned for projects that have taken 6 months. I'm talking about football, all that, and still not get the role.
Yeah.
I auditioned for The Equalizer. I met the casting director. I put an audition on tape with the casting director. I get a call like 2 days later. Hey, you booked a movie. You're flying out to Boston for the next 3 months doing a movie with Denzel. Like, I was like, what the, like, it was the quickest thing that ever happened, and it was doing a movie with Denzel. So I'm in there signing my contract. I get to Boston, I'm in there signing my contract, and all of a sudden I hear Denzel's voice in another room. And it literally took me back just because I'm like, that's not the TV.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's Denzel in the other room. Like,
that's,
I can literally
live and stereo.
And he was given note, like, this was like days before shooting. Like, literally, he's still in there with the writer going through and talking about each scene.
Yeah.
About the person, the POV, just what's everybody's, you know, motivate. Like, he's really that involved in the project. And that really, you know, showcased to me why he is who he is by how detailed and informed he is about the scripts.
I mean, that goes back to, you know, what we were talking about earlier, where it's like, you know, you have to do you. You have to, you know, people aren't going to write for you. You have to have the, you know, the currency to know and be steadfast of what you want the finished product to be.
Yes.
And when you're his level, you can obviously dole out those notes.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody can, but,
and
you know, that's why his movies do well, because he's got so much of himself attached
to it. And now that people can, because he's got this long resume, people can write roles for him.
Yeah.
Like, people now know a voice, know a style. And, like, eventually, once you, you know, begin to build your brand, people can, you know, cater and tailor things for you. So that's what he's done. He's built something, an incredible legacy.
Bananas. Like, he's, I mean,
he's one of the greatest of all time.
One of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, he's GOAT. He's definitely the GOAT.
Here's the thing. I like to do weird segues, and it actually works perfect.
Okay.
Works perfect like this as we're tying down. You ever, like, there's things that, this blew my mind. I love talking about things that just blow your mind or things that you don't realize. And speaking of Denzel Washington, here's the thing about George Washington that I want to, it's funny. But
what?
I mean, it's segues,
here's
bro.
The thing about George Washington.
George Washington. Well, listen to this.
Okay.
Here's something to think about, though. Because this is one of those things, especially on, like, this weird, awesome set that we have here. George, here's something to think about, though, because you don't think about this. Ready? When I saw this, it literally just, like, shocked me, because it's one of those things you don't think about.
Okay.
George Washington died before the term dinosaur was coined and theorized, which means he didn't know what a dinosaur was.
He didn't know what a dinosaur was.
George Washington died December 14th, 1799, and the word dinosaur on the taxon Dinosauria was named in 1841.
What a sad life.
Isn't that wild?
What, like, a sad
something
life.
Something we take so
he
much for granted.
He did not know what a dinosaur was.
Isn't that interesting?
George Washington, he didn't live his best life.
He didn't YOLO. He got hosed.
He didn't YOLO.
But isn't that weird? Like, things like that.
Things like that. Like, dinosaurs.
So
did dinosaurs exist? Let's talk about it. If they didn't even have, you didn't know a name.
Didn't,
like,
know what
George
it was.
Washington was, that wasn't too long.
I mean, in theory, if there's not a name for something, does it exist?
Does it exist? If it falls in the forest and no one hears it, that
if they don't find it, no, I'm gonna keep going.
Who, you know what
keep
I'm saying?
Going. We're recording all of this.
Did it fall?
Like, this is the soundbite. This is the advertisement for this episode.
Let's get to it, okay? Let's figure this out. The dinosaurs exist or not? George Washington invented dinosaurs. Quote.
I think that's a quote.
That's a quote.
Dinosaur. A quote. George Washington invented dinosaurs.
He invented dinosaurs.
That's the George
On
Washington
his
theory.
On deathbed, he's like, we shall call them dinosaurs.
Dinosaurs. Jurassic World Part 3 is going to be about George Washington.
He gets points off of that.
He's going to get points.
He's
at
points.
The back end.
He's getting
that's why he had wooden
points.
Teeth because he was spending all his money on dinosaurs.
He blew it all. The Tooth Fairy was chipping him off, man. He invested it.
So we're on a network called Prohibited.
Okay.
Which is like a cannabis and culture based. Do you partake in any of the substances? Do you smoke weed? Do you do anything?
I've partaked. Yes.
Yeah? What's your favorite? Because I haven't. I don't. My friends do. My friends do enough for all of us.
See,
my friends do plenty.
And when we do your Wikipedia, we're going to be like,
A square. Like it's just George a picture
Washington.
Of a square.
It's going to be like George Washington. He did not know what a dinosaur was.
It's a picture like, of a boring not, person.
You know, like, well, I definitely, I for me, it's more for, because I had back surgery.
Yeah, yeah.
I had back surgery, and it's definitely, I would rather do that than take the Vicodins and all this stuff.
My friend Michelle is very similar.
Like, no, like I'd rather smoke a little weed for my back pain than to take Vicodin. I don't want to do that.
So you smoke it? Is smoking it, that's the best way for medicinal?
Yes, for me, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, my friends have that, had like bad knees and backs, and that's the
their go-to. For pain management.
It's also because it's the non-addictive of the Vicodins. And,
exactly.
I mean, it's a... These prescription medicines are, these prescription painkillers are, is an epidemic that, you know.
It's ridiculous. It's, like, you see so many people that it's ruined their lives.
Ruins their lives.
Ruins their lives.
What is the main one, like fentanyl or something? That Tom Petty and all these, and the Prince,
like,
they all
I've
had.
I see people, like, their whole lives ruined being addicted to these painkillers, man. And I'm like, nah, I don't
When you can just, you know, smoke some joints and have the
fine.
Same effect.
It'd be good. Be good. So that's, you know, the purpose of why I definitely
smoke it. Yeah. I like it.
So, you know. You should try it.
I should try it.
You should try it.
Yeah, I have.
George Washington. Don't be George Washington.
I just want to. I want to see a sketch of George Washington refusing to look at dinosaur bones.
Refusing.
No. He's like, no, I don't believe it.
I don't believe it.
I don't believe it.
The word doesn't exist. Yes.
Since we're wrapping up here, let's play a game. Since you're an actor, let's play. Let's do 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon here. Do you like? You ever play this game? You ever play this game?
Kevin Bacon. Let's go.
You were in Die Hard, let's see you connect. Kevin Bacon to Bruce Willis in 6 films, because I did it in 3.
Oh, that's tough, man. I'm probably going to be stumped on this one, I'll be honest. Kevin Bacon in 6 films.
Connected to Bruce Willis.
Connected to Bruce Willis. Footloose.
Okay.
Is that one?
Okay, let's go backwards. So Kevin Bacon in Footloose.
Footloose, who was in Footloose?
John Lithgow.
John Lithgow, I've worked with Bruce Willis in... can't remember the name of it. Am I right or wrong? No.
That, I don't know. I mean, I use John Lithgow as well.
John Lithgow, yeah. I don't know. I'm low. I said this is...
I went from...
What'd you do?
I did Kevin Bacon to John Lithgow in Footloose.
Mm-hmm.
John Lithgow to Sylvester Stallone in Cliffhanger.
Okay.
And then Sylvester Stallone to Bruce Willis in the Expendables movies.
That
works.
See,
too,
you
yeah.
got. I'm
trying to think who else John Lithgow. What other movies John Lithgow was in?
I can't remember. I'm the worst at that. This is probably the worst game I could have ever.
Yeah.
I'm a loser.
You're a winner. I think you're a winner
This is. Don't be George Washington. That's gonna be my friend.
Alan, thanks so much for doing the show.
Thank you.
Once again, tell everybody where they can find you on the internet and all that.
Yes, man. Everybody, please follow. Maldonado is everywhere. I know the last name is tough, but damn it, you guys are gonna learn it. Maldonado, Maldonado, is everywhere. Please check it out. And also, download Everybody Digital. It's for free on Apple and Android.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much. Thank you guys for watching.
Yeah.
Tell all your friends to watch it. Post, reshare, comment. If you have a fact or something mind-blowing, leave it below. I have a book out on Amazon.com called Don't Be a Dick. Make sure you buy that.
Don't be a dick and not buy it.
Yeah.
There
and
it
as always, don't be a George Washington.
Yeah, don't be George Washington.
Don't be George
That's
Washington.
That's your next book.
That's my next book. Don't be George Washington.
Boom.
TM. Hashtag. I'm going to make a short film and put it up on your thing.
Yes,
George Washington.
Don't be George Washington.
Thanks, everybody.
I love it. All right, everybody.